Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. You know I'm a big fan of enjoying life while still being smart financially. That's why I love ButcherBox. I can get a variety of high-quality meat, seafood, chicken, and pork at an amazing value, all with exclusive member deals delivered to my door with free shipping always. One thing I just never wanted to cut out of my spending plan is eating good food. And with ButcherBox, I don't have to, and neither do you. Where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Yes, you heard that right. One of my favorite go-to dinners is a salmon bowl. I'm not even a huge salmon lover, but ButcherBox's wild-caught salmon is oh so good. I make a nice little marinade, saute some veggies, cook the salmon, and throw in some Weiss. And it is an amazing dinner. If you want to take less trips to the grocery store and always have prepared meat in the freezer for a lot less money, you need ButcherBox in your life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/ETM and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ETM. Hey, I'm Shauna Compton Game. This is Millennial Money, and today we're talking with Michelin star chef Nicholas Eksted, who is on fire. I have been so excited to share this podcast with you. Recently, Jeff and I had the pleasure of traveling to Stockholm to put together a millennial guide to Stockholm for you and a couple of podcast episodes. And we just met with so many cool people. It is actually, I think, one of my favorite cities to travel to now. I did not expect I would love it as much as I did. And I'm kind of jonesing to go back there. But one of the coolest things that we did was have the opportunity to sit down with Nicholas Eksted, who is a big TV star and has also won a Michelin star. And in case you don't know what a Michelin star is, it is the creme de la creme of being a chef. It's kind of the Oscars of being a chef. And Nicholas is just one of those guys that you could sit around and talk with forever. He has so many cool stories to share, and his restaurant is so innovative. And so we sat down and we talked with him all about his entrepreneurial journey, and I think he's got some real gems in there, not just for anyone who loves food or loves cooking or is an entrepreneur. These are, I think, great life lessons that everybody should learn about. And so I hope you enjoy this interview. He is one cool guy, and I am just so excited to share this with you.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain. Thank you.
So what do you love about Stockholm?
Like, I mean, there's
because you're not from here.
So. No, I moved here against my will, but because of love. My wife lived here. We're from northern Sweden originally, and so is she. And so we met up there, and then we talked about where to live, and she just said, like, well, either we live in Stockholm or we don't live together.
Yeah.
I didn't have an option. And in the beginning, I kind of had a tough time getting to comfortably, like, settle down in the city, because it is a, like, well, you've been here a couple of days. It's a stiff town. It has it's a very fashionable town. Everyone dressed really nice.
Yeah.
Everyone looks sharp, and everyone are very business focused. Yeah. And so it's very different from the other cities in Scandinavia. Like, Copenhagen is much more chilled out, soft, kind of relaxed. This is way more, it's a different vibe in the city. But when you scrape the surface and you get to know people, and now I have some really nice friends, and the city is nice to you. And especially being an entrepreneur, a restaurateur in the city, it's nice because there's a lot of money in the city, so you can... You can do business easily here than in other parts of the country. So
yeah. So tell us a little bit about, like, being a chef, being an entrepreneur, you know, kind of running your own brand. Like, how do you get to the place that you're at?
Well, I think, I mean, of course, I think it's similar to everywhere. I mean, it's hard work, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of, like, you know, suffering and
pain
and very good bank contacts.
Yes, right.
So I think that's the key, kind of, like, to financially be, like, safe and knowing that it'll take a couple of years before you get it going. And then just being very relaxed with paying a lot of tax.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you can never, like, this country is, like, taxed.
Right.
And so you just need to enjoy that.
Right.
Knowing that, you know, the money goes to great things. It goes to, you know, the welfare. It goes to beautiful hospitals. It goes to a school system that works and that parents can take paternity leave. So you need to just, you know, be like, okay, that's the thing. Those are the rules. Let's go with it.
Right.
I never complain paying the tax. I just know that comes every month, the 12th. Okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, we met someone the other day, and he was saying, he has a PR company, and he was saying how, you know, business-wise, like, he made the decision that, well, maybe we don't even really want to make revenue.
No.
You know? And that's such a foreign concept
to
someone from the States, because that's what we're all about. You know?
Yes, revenue is not an important thing.
Right.
No, it's not. It's very different from the States in that business kind of thing. Like, it's comfortably paying, you know, you need to, you know, break even and paying your tax and get yourself a good living, then the business is a healthy business. Revenue is not an important thing to a small entrepreneur or businessman. It's like, it's different, of course, if you're on the stocks exchange or if you're a public company, you need to do revenue because of where you are. But as a private business, it's not an important thing, no.
And is it easy to... aside from that, run your own business in Stockholm?
It has challenges, of course, but I think it's everywhere, right?
Right.
You have different challenges. I think the great thing about this city is that if your product is good and you put your soul into the product, people will come.
Right.
And they'll eat it and they'll appreciate that you made an effort, you know, trying to make a great product. But on the other hand, they're unforgivable.
Right.
I usually compare the Swedes to Japanese. You know, we're very, like, unforgettable. Like, if you don't do a good thing,
right? Like a bad dish,
a bad dish, or a bad waiter, or like, they'll thanks for the meal. They maybe even tip, but they'll never come back.
Wow. Yeah.
And they won't say anything. They're not like Americans who are like, this is horrible, you know, or like, terrible dish, you know. The Swedes were just like, okay.
Yes. Will not be recommended nor coming back.
But they silently, like, kill you.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a big difference. But, you know, they're very, like, open to new things. because of Scandinavia not being a culinary, I mean, originally a culinary destination, we kind of built, we have to build a reputation. So it's a, in Europe, I usually compare countries with, you know, wine, wine-producing countries and non-wine-producing countries are two different culinary scenes. So if you look at, like, Scandinavia, the Benelux countries in Great Britain, you know, we don't originally grow wine. Now, thanks to climate change, we can start growing them. But historically, we haven't been able to do it. And then the culinary scene has been completely different. We haven't had this kind of like rooted culinary heritage like you have in Italy and France. So the difference here is that people don't have a culinary kind of history from their childhood. Of course, they have memories of their mom and dad cooking for them, but they don't have like strong identity to one culinary history. Right. So they're way more open to new things. And that's what's great about cooking in Sweden. So if I put an extra ingredient into my dish, or if I add, if it's not completely 100% Swedish, people are still, you know, still find it interesting. They'll say like, oh, this is nice. This is like veal, but cooked with juniper berries. Oh, usually, I mean, maybe originally you would have done it with allspice, but then a change was, you could never do that in Italy. They would be like...
They won't eat it.
Like, it's like, it's you know, Massimo Bottura, the famous Italian chef, he says, like, cooking in Italy is like throwing a stone into the water and making the circles into squares. That's how hard it is.
Right.
We are in a way much easier position in Sweden. We have a much more open and friendly customer. And they are not, they don't always have to be comfortable, you know? And that's, I think, a challenge for the American people, you know, the American chefs, when they work in the States, it's very kind of, it needs to be comfortable, it needs to be large dishes, it needs to be like, and it has to have a certain type of, they have to cook a certain type of food. But here, I think it's, that's what's nice, it's open, like, yeah.
And did you grow up always wanting to be a chef, or...
Yes, I started cooking really early. I lived up in northern Sweden, and my parents had a vegetable business. So when I was a child, they always, like, the products were really important because they knew they used to have a market, you know, a market stand selling vegetables in Stockholm before they moved up to northern Sweden. My dad was a whitewater canoer. So he had, like, he was an entrepreneur in the whitewater canoeing business.
Wow.
Very small market.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Niche.
Yeah, very niche.
And my mom was a teacher. And I grew up in this very small town with only like 800 inhabitants in the rural parts of Sweden, you know, 3-hour drive to the closest McDonald's. So like one shop. And yeah, I mean, my parents did a lot of foraging and hunting. And so the kind of product was always like just there. It wasn't that something we talked about. It wasn't something that was like, it was just like very natural on the table. So I think that is a big part of my cooking, and still today, like, I use a lot of these techniques that we cooked as a child, I still use here in the restaurant. So that was a big thing. And then kind of like, yeah, and then I started snowboarding. We lived in the mountains, so I did, and then I was kind of like in 16, 17 years old, I fell and had a quite severe back injury. And I couldn't continue, like, competing in snowboarding. And then, I don't know at what point, who said, but it was kind of, like, in that, like, time period that the culinary school kind of was introduced to me. And they said, like, why don't you stay at the culinary school? Why don't you start there? And then I just did. So, so it was kind of, like, yeah. I can't say that there was one day I woke up and said, like, I want to be a chef. But it just slowly was introduced to me. Yeah.
And how did you come up with a concept here at Exted?
Okay.
Maybe tell us a little bit about the concept.
Well, I can...
Because it is literally one of the most unique places I've ever eaten.
Okay, so. Great. Thank you. Well, okay, so we can start explaining maybe the technique. So the restaurant is built on cooking techniques. Like, so instead of being product-driven, as the new Nordic cuisine usually is...
Yeah.
I wanted a technical new Nordic restaurant. So that was it. So I started cooking very young, and I worked at different places around the world, and then I opened my own place when I was only 22 years old. That was a more like molecular cuisine, and it was really kind of like a success from day one. And I was way too young to do it. I was too young. I was naive. I kind of like success wasn't like I was. It just didn't get to me in a good way.
Yeah.
So I ran that for like 6-7 years till I was 28, 29, something like that. And then I. And also I was like, I was introduced to media and TV at a very early age too, and I was type of a celebrity chef in Sweden, a television celebrity chef, and it was a very strange thing because I'd look at myself, I wasn't comfortable with it, and they kind of like the media portrayed me in a way that I wasn't comfortable with, or maybe I was doing it though. So I was So actually, I just quit. I just left the whole thing. I closed the restaurant. I quit the TV show. It was the same period as I met my wife. I was even thinking of maybe doing something else. Maybe just moving up to northern Sweden, you know, opening a snowboard shop or something. Just like doing something completely different. I had like different things. But at the same time, you know, all these chefs that I used to work with and all these chefs that had been working in my restaurant, they all were all opening up their own restaurants. And, you know, my very old friend of mine, Rene Redzepi, opened Noma and hit it like hugely. And, you know, that's one of the, you know, one of 10 maybe people that were doing it. So it was like, it was very, and I had our first child, Winston, my son, was born. And I was with him paternity leave at home, and it's kind of like really frustrating to see that all my friends were really making it, because you know we've always been told as growing up and cooking that Sweden wasn't a or Scandinavia wasn't a cooking destination. We could never do like what El Bulli or Gordon Ramsay or Heston Blumenthal have done, because we were not in that geographically part of Europe where like restaurants hit it big and made internationally fame, but they did. And I knew that I could have done it if I had chosen a different path, you know.
Right.
If I would have stayed at the restaurant, I wouldn't have took down a TV career. If I wouldn't have like gone on the like celebrity chef leg, I could have stayed in my culinary, like where I was from cooking and dining with love. I would have like made it. And so it was really kind of like difficult for me. But in the same time, it was the happiest time of my life because my son was born, so I was with him at home. And so during that time, I was staying a lot at home, and I found this wonderful house out on the islands here in Stockholm, and in the archipelagos. And it still didn't need a ferry, so you could drive out there, which is quite unusual out on the island. So I kind of like, I wanted the house. I went out and looked at it. And I called my wife, and she said, like, oh, where is it? It's like, oh, I said the island, and she knew it, of course. And then, okay. And how much is it? She said, and I said, and I told her how much it was, and it wasn't that expensive. And she said, are you sure about that? That's a house out on the island. Sure, it's that price. I'm like, sure, yeah. And I'm talking to the guy here now, the broker, the real estate broker. Yeah. And then he said, like, but she's like, buy it. Like, buy it now. Otherwise, there's someone else buy it. And I was like, okay, I'll buy it. Like, okay, I'll have it. And then we went to the bank and we settled all the papers. Yeah. I bought it the same day. So I looked at it.
Wow.
And then I came home and we had dinner in the city. And like, and my wife's like, we talked about the house. And then I just like, and then I broke it. I was like, you know what? And she's like, oh, and she was very happy. And I said, it doesn't have electricity. And no running water. She's all quiet. Like, what? She's like, you've never heard of that in Sweden. Right. Not in Stockholm. Right. Like, every house has electricity. Right. And she's like, it doesn't have electricity? It's like, no. And she's like, well, and no running water. Like, well, there's a well, but there's no running water. And she's like, okay, that's strange. And then she thought I was lying. So she didn't take it that bad. She was like, well, he hasn't looked through the papers. You know, he's like,
it's got to be
electricity. It's got to be water. And then she started looking through the paper, and she called me. It's like, there's no electricity. Like, no, I told you. Okay, so, but then she got out and looked at it, and she loved the place as well. And then we started, and we had this young child, and the summer was coming up, and we started, like, settling down on the house, and we rented out the apartment, and we started our life out there. And then kind of, like, that was the thing. Like, how do we cook? Like, we love cooking. We love, like, family meals. We're not going to go and buy, you know, ready-to-eat meals and heat them up on nothing.
Right.
We're going to cook here. And so we built it, like, a stove, a wooden stove. We started, like, reading about Swedish, like, cooking techniques over open fire. We built a fire pit. We got the well going, and we got a pump up in the back of the house so we could hand pump the water into the house. We built it a shower. There was so many things we could do in the house that when you started reading about it, and there's people with these challenges everywhere.
Right.
We got this small solar panel up so we could charge our phones because that was essential, you know. I started charging my phone before I started cooking.
Yeah, that I believe. Priority.
So, yeah, it's priority. And then it just grew into people coming over to the house, chef's friends coming and eat dinners, and, you know, all these people in the restaurant business here in Stockholm coming over to the house, just our friends, and everyone's just, oh, so good, this food is just excellent. And my wife was also pregnant with our second child, and so we were at the same time we went to the it's not called a doctor when you're pregnant, is it? It's a
like a obstetrician,
checking your and then she's like, oh, you all your values are great, and you like, and because she was eating so well, because we were like cooking cast iron, and iron is something you need when you're pregnant.
Yes.
And I was cooking all these vegetables and seasonal vegetables and everything.
That might be the secret. You might be able to patent that idea.
Yes. Functional food.
Yes.
But functional technical
yes.
food. And so it was just excellent. It was a wonderful time of our life, and I still remember that first summer as just something so wonderful. And at the same time, you know, because, you know, it's always like that when you quit, right? When you stop doing something, all the people come to you and ask you stuff like, why didn't you ask me this like years ago? And then so what happened was that this restaurateur business guy here in the city that I'm still working with, he called me up and said, like, well, do you know what? I have this wonderful space in the city that I would love you to look at. I think it would be a great restaurant for you. And it's like, I'm not gonna run any more restaurants. And then I didn't even tell my wife, because I knew she would kill me if I told her I was gonna open a restaurant with two small children
and no running water.
It's like, I just bought a restaurant. And then he kind of called me again and said, like, well, I really want you to come down and look at the restaurant. And then I went. So this is it. This is where we are. I went down, and there was, of course, it didn't look like this, but. Jag tar gärna lite kaffe. He just asked me if I wanted some coffee. And I came down to the restaurant, and I walked down in the middle of the dining room, and then I looked on to the left, and there was a wooden oven, because it's been an Italian pizza place. And extraction, like nothing else. And then I asked him, like, why is this extraction so huge? Why are the pipes so big? Oh, well, do you know what? They used so much wood in here because it was so popular. So they needed like a double pipe extraction and then a special chimney on the roof. And then I kind of like, I thought of the cooking at home.
It all came down.
Yeah. And then I just like, okay. So maybe I could like cook like Swedish cooking technique. And then I kind of like, I actually went home. I even forget to fill up the car with gas because I was driving back to the house, and I was just thinking so much of this birch wood that I actually ran out of gas. So I had to go to a local farmer to get extra gas for the car, and then I filled it up, and then I went home, and then I kind of and then I had to tell her, and then, but she took it really well, and she's like, oh well, that's real, and she also thought it was really smart, like at once, like when you started talking about it, that
It all made sense,
you know, like, of course, cooking with birch, being Swedish, being from northern Sweden, living in a house without... I mean,
it's like that moment where everything...
Yeah, where everything just, like, makes sense. And, and then I was just so excited. And then I started, like, looking for a team, interior architect, and...
the business side.
The business side of it, started working with that to try, I knew that I had to take only young people to work with me because I thought, like, I'll take people like in the 20s only because I mean, old chefs, old, I mean, they just wouldn't do it.
Right, they wouldn't,
like, why would you want to do that? I knew I had to have young soldiers now that they're being asked, like, interest, and I found some great people. That
so what do you guys exactly cook with here?
Birch.
Just and that, that's just fire and wood and some charcoal too, right? So,
We use a little bit of charcoal. That's actually kind of new. We started working with charcoal two months we've been doing charcoal things.
But
usually we only use birch.
Right. And obviously it's been well received.
Amazingly well received. And especially being maybe like in US standard, this is pretty a real restaurant with seats. And but here in Europe, this is considered like casual brasserie. You know, it doesn't have like cloths. It doesn't have like, but we're still kind of like, I know that in the US, kind of like a Michelin star can come to a restaurant that is kind of like rustique. And, but here it's kind of unusual.
But it's now it's sort of changed. Though,
it's changing quickly. Yeah. That's true. It is. And I think that's really good thing. And I think that's really good for the Guide Michelin. I think it's they really need that.
Why do you think it's changed here?
In Sweden?
Why is the fine dining kind of changed to that?
It's just what the customers want,
I
mean, it's a market, so people don't want stiff restaurants. People want casual places, but they still want great food. So I think that's why.
So that, like, when we walked in, I told Jeff, like, the feeling I get from this is like, I expect like a warm, cozy fire. Like,
yes.
Just the colors. How much of the food influences the space, or the space influencing the food?
Well, it was definitely the food that influenced the space, of course, because I didn't know how the restaurant was going to look like until I started cooking. So we started cooking, and then we kind of came up with a couple of dishes, and then I worked with Jeanette, who did the interior, and she was very kind of like, she wanted to get that whole idea of growing up in Sweden and, you know, getting all the materials to be Swedish. So every single piece of metal and wood is local from where I'm from. The tree is fruit wood from my grandparents' summer house down in southern Sweden. It's pear and apple. And then the leather is from Sweden, from northern Sweden, and all the stone is from this Stonebrook in northern Sweden too, and also all the metal and the brass and copper is also from Sweden, and the cast iron as well. So it's a very kind of like the wood is pine, the floor is pine.
And you guys have a You released a cookbook recently too.
Have you got it?
I don't know.
Okay, get you a copy before you leave.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So how did that happen and has that been pretty successful?
Well, it's just out.
Okay.
So it's it came out a month ago.
I thought it was before because I thought I'd get an email before.
So it's been in the stores for a month. Well, we'll see now. I think that Christmas sales will make it like. We'll see if it makes it or break it. But the publisher says, I asked her actually yesterday, and asked her, how's sales going? She said, sales are doing good. I don't know.
So whatever that means.
You sold some books.
Yes. So I don't know in numbers how much that is, but it's doing okay. And so we, so I wanted to do a book, of course, but I didn't want to do it like an ambitious restaurant book. I wanted to do more the story of, you know, home cooking, how to cook an analog chef at home. And I tried to do it as convenient and as you can with that those techniques. Of course, it's a little more complicated than turning the gas stove on, but I think it's working though. A lot of people are buying it and enjoying it. So it's be out in US in April.
Cool. And did you get back into television then after, like?
Yeah, do a few appearances, but I don't have my own show.
Yeah.
But I do kind of like I do a little, some collaborations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but I don't have a permanent, like, right, which I used to do like once a week.
Right, right, right.
And but I'm kind of happy with that.
Right, right.
It's very comfortable.
Well, like, I was going to say, are you more comfortable now, even when you do appearance on news or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of like it's. Yeah, I don't have that kind of like. I don't know. I guess it's like a thing, like growing up as well. Like, you don't, just having a family of your own, you kind of like, there's other important things in life, like running your business, you know, getting the kids to school, and then you're kind of happy with that. Like, being a celebrity is nothing like that's really important to me anymore, which maybe it was once, but I think that was, it's really, really dangerous trying to be, being like a celebrity, famous for, you know, you need a product, you know, it has to be something there to talk about. And it's just like this, you know, as you're asking me these questions, they're just obvious to me.
Right.
Like, I can talk all day about the way that we work on the techniques, the way we use Birch, the way we use cast iron, in which ways, you know, my chefs, you know, come up with new ideas, how we bake bread, our wheat, you know, I could talk forever about that. But if you would ask me, like, oh, what's important to you on TV, it would be like, it would be way more difficult for me to explain what's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are there any other, like, you know, with the success of this restaurant, are there any other projects that you...
Yes, well, I really want to go to the UK, kind of like, so I would love to have a restaurant there as well. I have a lot of friends in London, and I've spent a lot of time there, and my parents lived there a short time when I was a kid as well, so we lived there for a year when I was a child, and I have my brothers there, and my so it's like that I'm looking to maybe to have something in England eventually.
And is that's just a whole different culinary scene then?
Yes, I mean it is very different. London is super, super competitive, and it's a difficult city to cook in. And I would like to give it a go.
Yeah, try.
I would like to try. At least, I mean, this American friend told me once that you Swedes are so lucky. You have the best insurance company in the world. It's called Sweden.
Right.
And it's kind of true. I never thought of it, but it's true. It's kind of like you can really fuck up anywhere, but you still can always move back to Sweden.
Right, yeah.
Right.
That is very true.
Yeah. The hospitals and the school system and everything is just like, well, you know, you could be broke here and still kind of comfortable.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah.
But, do you think with this restaurant you kind of hit your stride as a chef?
Yes, definitely. Like, yeah.
And you discovered a whole other side of yourself.
It was definitely my
comfort. It was there.
I mean, it was there, and I had, of course, a platform, and maybe it would have been difficult for someone else to pull it off, like financially, to get the money going and stuff like that, but it was definitely my comeback and my international breakthrough, definitely, yeah.
Right.
Before this, I mean, people in Sweden knew who I was, or like, there were people kind of like in the culinary world who knew me, but I mean, it was after this I kind of like I go abroad, and you know, I talk at food events, and I'm invited to different different events all over the world, so it was definitely something that was made me a new career,
right,
and very comfortable with that.
How do you collaborate with your chefs then on coming up with a different menu and stuff like that? Because you guys seasonally change your menu, right?
Yes. So, I mean, we work permanently on changing the menu seasonally, of course. But also in the technical aspect. So we like trying to work on either techniques that we used to work with that we try to bring back in a different way, or we try to research new techniques that usually are forgotten techniques, and there's so many techniques out there cooking wise because if you look at cooking, you know, without electricity, of course it's a way longer period, you know. It's, you know, they've found, you know, I think they talk about cooking and fire being older than, you know, Homo sapiens, really old. It's like before us, there was still us, there was fire cooking, you know. And so, I mean, of course, it's been been there for some. So there's periods of, I mean, so cooking with fire and cooking with cast iron, and as we do with birch, we've done that historically for such a long time in Sweden. So even the history has different techniques. So if you look at the 1700, they had a completely different different cooking technique. Right. Because back then, 1700 is a really interesting time in Sweden, because it was so influenced by the French. The French cooking, like the whole royal family was French, and it was a very big French period. And they really didn't like the flavor of grilled. They liked cooked things back then. And you can really see that in recipes, that when the fire was on, they didn't want the smokiness to come into to the flavor. They didn't use fat that much because they didn't want it to taste, because that was the taste of poverty, you know. It was like, because there was a fire everywhere, you know, every house was heated with fire, and every stove was heated by fire. So they wanted to exclude that. They wanted the cook, if a fine cooking back then was something that didn't taste of grill and didn't taste of fire. And that's of course completely different from what we do today in a modern grill. You know, you want it to taste like charcoal, you know, you even would spray it with
charcoal.
You infuse it with a smoke pistol.
So it's
super interesting to go back in history and see how cooking kind of like changes with fashion. And so you can look into that period of cooking, and then you could find odd techniques that they used then, and then we tried to put them back into this contemporary kitchen.
Right.
But the most difficult part for us is that we wanted to look modern on the plate, right? Because coming here is not like going to the museum. It's supposed to be high-end cooking,
right?
Because otherwise, this just wouldn't be a point having right now. So I usually say that we're this kind of like, we're a restaurant competing against motor yachts with the sails. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Right.
So do you still not have electricity and water?
In a summer house, we don't. No.
Oh, okay.
But we have a modern house now.
Oh,
so.
Okay. So just see how long your wife dealt with that.
No, I cook eggs for my kids for breakfast on an electric stove.
Yes. Right.
All right, so wouldn't you agree, he is one cool dude. He's got a cookbook out right now. You can get it on Amazon. I'm going to make sure and link it in the show notes, so be sure and check that out. And I sure hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please feel free to follow me on Twitter @ShaunaGame and Instagram @millennial_money.